from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Now, before we start the show, I'd like to apologize for the fact that you did not get your second show last week because of a fuck-up on my part. I received a bit of news from a fan, and because I'd been so busy with the campaign, I was kind of half-assing my research. And turns out that the piece of news we were talking about was over 2 years old. So I had to drop that show. I mean, maybe if it would have been 1 year, I could have just gotten away with it. But 2 years old for a news story? That's just sad.
And you know what? Honestly, I seem to remember having done a show about it before. We've talked about, because it was the Pope and condoms, and we've definitely talked about that several times.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I guess, you know, every once in a while I get mad at the Catholic Church. And I'd like to go, the rant was good, but it was probably old news. Yeah, old news. The second part of the show, which I'll see if I can salvage and maybe include as a bonus section in this podcast as a way of making up for it, but it's difficult to say because the way that the shows work is they often kind of, I don't know, jump back and forth. That's sort of a problem of the tangenty nature of our show. Whoops. This is not built for syndication, okay? It's just stream of consciousness, people, and sometimes it comes out wrong, especially when Daddy doesn't do his research. Oh, well.
Damn you.
Well, speaking of why we weren't doing any research, I have been busy as a fucking dog trying to wrap up what, by the time you're listening to this, is the final day, and I mean day, of the whole Bible Stories campaign. And if you remember the story, or if you're new to it, I'll reiterate it in the short fucking phrase, because we originally did this about 20 days ago, a 30 long day campaign on Kickstarter for the book, and we had almost $20,000, and everything was going good until the final 24 hours when we had to pull the plug. And then we just started right back with an Indiegogo campaign, and lo and behold, remember that one show where I said we did it, guys? Well, now I get to say it again. Like, I feel like George W. Bush saying mission accomplished, but hey, you know what? That's reality. You never really finish anything.
So wait, you're saying the war in Iraq continues, or
yeah, there's still a kind of war there. Yeah. Did everybody forget just because there was a banner? It's like we're done. Really? That's a long time ago. It doesn't feel like it's done. Does anybody think it's done? Seems like a pretty fucked up place still.
Yeah, but they're all fucked up over there. It's like, don't even bother to fix the Middle East. You have enough problems here at home trying to fix North America.
Yeah, and every time you try to fix it, something horrible happens, like that earthquake in Iran. Do you know what is the first thing that I thought about when that happened, as pathetic as I am? I was like, I'm pretty sure that's the plot for Battlefield 3. Wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, there was an earthquake in Iran or something like that, and then there was an excuse to invade or some shit. Let's hope that the screenwriters were just pulling things out of their ass.
Yeah, not just going with the most ridiculous ideas ever. Like, what is it? There's a new Red Dawn movie coming out. It's a remake of Red Dawn. And originally it had the Russians coming over and taking over America. And this new one here has the North Koreans. And I like how the North Koreans are the new boogeymen, because they're basically a proxy for the Chinese. We're not allowed to treat the Chinese like they're enemies, because they're too powerful and we don't want to offend them.
And, well, the North Koreans would be pretty easy to really kick their asses if they did try to invade. Because let me tell you something, they're all starving to death.
Well, the way that it's played, the way that it's always portrayed, is the fact that if North Korea could take out South Korea, I've read a lot of stuff about it. When you do nothing but basically work your military all day, all night, they've apparently got tunnels that go miles and miles into South Korea, and as soon as the invasion is going to start, just like tens of thousands of troops are going to pop up on the other side of the border, all in cities throughout South Korea. It's going to be a gigantic mess. So if they take over South Korea and then move out and then take over other parts of Asian Pacific, at that point you've got you know, a powerhouse. Completely unlikely. It's not like...
You know how unlikely it is? You can't even go to North Korea with any pieces of equipment that are anywhere older than the 1980s. Like, you can't show up there with modern technology because everywhere over there, they don't have any. They're crazy fucking backwards. They're the place that time forgot.
Yeah, except for all of the stuff that China gives them, you know, all the military weaponry.
Yeah, that starving soldiers can't exactly... I'm telling you, that their army is in pathetic shambles. I mean, all they can talk about is how hungry they are when they're marching. Okay? Not a strong army that produces. I feel like Yoda right now. So if you're listening to this and you're early, you know, like you're one of those people that sort of downloads the show as soon as it goes up, let me remind you, final day for the campaign. And that means also if you want your face illustrated in the book, by the way, because that offer will not be available once the campaign is over. I'm not bringing that back because then, I don't have time. Then after that, it's just sort of like pumping these suckers out and just getting this shit done, yo, because there's so much work that's got to be put in. It's not just, you know, the book itself. I got to do the audiobook. That's going to take a long time to do. Although, you know, everybody that already pre-ordered the ebook and the audiobook, I'm telling you, you guys are going to just, you're going to be set for like, I don't know how long. How many hours is an audiobook? Like fucking 8 or 9 hours? It's pretty ridiculous.
If you're Stephen King, it's like 100.
Okay, I'm not Stephen King anything. And you know what? There's one thing I promised myself I wouldn't talk about it. Just because I really hate the way that the atheism scene has developed its own kind of drama. And I always promised myself that I'd stay out of it because I'm like Mr. Independent. I don't need any of the other guys doing it all myself, so I don't really need to talk about it. But the one thing that I kind of want to let everybody know who wants to take part in the debate is this. Please keep your answers short, okay? Everyone is writing lengthy fucking essays about their opinions. And I'm going to tell you, that's not generally a good idea. You got to keep your answers short. And I think the problem people have is that, look, can we all admit that we don't really read everything online? You're probably the same way, right? We skim. We just sort of like, yeah, I got a vague idea. Because there's so much information, it's like a bit of an overload. So you learn to pretty much not read everything.
Nah, I read everything. This is probably why we did a show about news that was 2 years old. You know,
well, the only thing I didn't do is look at the date. That was the problem. But look, generally speaking, even when you read comments or people's stuff, like you can't possibly. Nobody does. I mean, like the attention span of the world and of the internet is short, and it's so short, in fact, that people will usually misconstrue your opinion based on the length of your opinion. All right, it's sort of like, you know, Shakespeare was it that said, I think. Brevity is the soul of wit. I mean, that's how I feel about the book anyways, as I'm writing it. I'm like, keep it fucking short because there's plenty of ways that I could make it long. And I think that's a bad idea. I think as soon as you have any argument that sort of takes you 5 fucking pages to go through, you're not winning. Like, no one's going to really just read every little piece of it. You just have to accept that maybe not every aspect of your opinion is going to be understood. But at the very least, you should try to get the general gist of it out. And I think coherently and as briefly as possible. This is a piece of advice for my fellow atheists out there. Keep it brief, people. Like, just as brief as you fucking can. That's all. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah, well, no need to release a Michael Shermer tome.
well, remember, like, last podcast, which, like I said, maybe it'll go up, maybe it won't. But we were trying to defend Sam Harris. And I remember in one of my – I wrote an open letter to him saying that part of the problem maybe was also his written prose. And I know that someone criticized me saying, I love his prose and I think it's great. And my issue is saying, you're writing a blog, sir. Like, you're not writing a fucking book. And truth be told, like, if you've got a nice writing style, that's all fine and good. But I actually think that a blog is a place where you're just actually supposed to speak far more authentically, if you want, rather than carefully. I feel like if you're just being careful, you're not being genuine. And I think that people kind of respond to genuineness more than they respond to really fancy, nice writing.
Also, keep in mind, look at standard blogging formula. Like for me and for you, and I know a lot of other websites, what they do is they'll take an article and they'll take one paragraph out of that article.
And they'll dissect it. Yeah.
No, and they'll just blog about it. Because in the end, half the time, you can take an article's entire meaning out of one paragraph from that article, because that's all that was really necessary.
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, I think blogging is people who blog are in the business of regurgitating materials that's already written. Like, if you're writing a blog post about, say, I don't know, like, if you have your own opinion about something, all I'm saying is that you should probably keep it brief, because no one's really going to read the entire fucking thing. And at the very least, you're probably going to be taken out of context in your gigantic essay of a fucking response. That's all. I think we need to go back to the idea that if you're trying to make a point, I think you should be as brief as fucking possible. That's all. All right, let's move on to our first point. And I don't know if I can keep this one brief, because this is something that's been bothering me for I don't know how many years, maybe 4 or 5 years. It's been a long time that I've been talking about the problem of child witches in Africa. And some of these problems have started migrating to Western countries. There was an BBC reported recently that the government is trying to take some real steps into stopping child abuse because of superstition. What they mean by that is that there's immigrants from Africa, many of them from the Democratic Republic of Congo, but I think there's also Uganda and Nigeria on that list, of places where, you know, like these immigrants come over and the same abuse that's being enacted in their countries is happening here. Now, it's obviously in smaller doses, but it's nevertheless very alarming. Like, I can tell you that all told, Scotland Yard has conducted over 83 investigations into faith-based child abuse in the past 10 years. Maybe that doesn't seem like a high number, but you have to remember that the cases themselves are fucking atrocious. Like, there's this kid, Christy Baumu, 15 years old in 2010. He was basically tortured for 3 days because his sister and her boyfriend were convinced that he was a witch. He was begging to die near the end when they finally drowned him in the bath. Now, they went to jail, if that's any bit of good news. But there was also another kid who they only identified as Adam. It was a torso found in the Thames. They also believe that something similar happened, and then the body was just disposed of after a botched exorcism. And these kinds of things are happening. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to find out, like, what exactly are the causes? Right? Because, I mean, I've talked a lot of smack saying, well, I blame religion. I think that's no fucking mystery. But I wanted to sort of like do a little bit more research. So I dug up and I found a report from the Save the Children International organization. You're probably familiar with them. Odds are they're like an organization that goes out and tries to, you know, like they're the Amnesty International, if you want, for kids, specifically for kids. And they released a report on the Congo, and this is a really long report. We're going to be talking about this. Number one, we're going to be talking about some of the analysis they've made about how people make determinations of what qualifies a witch and why witchcraft is sort of like one of those why it's growing, in a sense, like the accusations. What are the forces that are at work here? And one of the things that they do talk about, and this is the first and most important thing, is that religion is the one that this is the primary source of the problem, okay? In two ways. The first is that witchcraft has a long history in the Congo. It's kind of like primitive religions where it was mostly adults that were witches, and witches would be like the kind of judges. They would handle disputes and apparently perform, you know, rituals to curse people who, you know, had to be paid back for some perceived injustice or so on and so forth. So think of them as the kind of moral police, if you want. And this is still practiced in many of the rural areas of the Congo. Now, the whole business of child witchcraft, this is a fairly new phenomenon. In fact, as the report states, that it basically goes back to the 1990s. With the increased urbanization of the population, what's happened is that the sort of superstitious belief in witchcraft has now had a toxic blending with the beliefs of Christianity, you know, specifically Catholicism and their obsession with witchcraft. Oh, sorry, bird's going nuts. Their obsession with witchcrafts. You know, for instance, like there are many passages in the Bible that talk about, you know, you can't suffer a witch to live and so on and so forth. You know, despite that, there are numerous instances in the Bible of people casting lots and, you know, doing magic spells or whatever. But hey, you know, God commanded them to do it, so it was all right when they did it. So you have this, you have this sort of all pre-existing religious notion that witchcraft is evil, and now what you have in this sort of new urban area is increased family pressures. And what that means is that there's, you know, poverty is a real issue over there, and there are no safety nets. And there are plenty of reasons why some people would want to get rid of family members, specifically children, that are now a big, gigantic financial burden on them. And this constitutes a way in order to be able to do this, a justification, if you will. So imagine that you are the brother of someone who has recently died of AIDS and left you with a child. And now you have to take care of this child and you have no money. What are the odds that you're going to see some of his troubling behavior as a symptom of some kind of witchcraftery and then accuse that child of that in order to be able to segregate, separate, and possibly get rid of, you know, either by chasing them away or killing them? Like, this is what's happening. And these are the fucking forces that are contributing to it. I mean, poverty is not the only reason, though it is a very strong reason.
Well, you tie that to the fact that these people really do believe that witches exist. I mean, it's not like kind of a question. It's not even a hypothetical. These are cultures where witchcraft exists, and you go and visit. People visit witches and interact with witches, and witches are real, man. They are real. It's not like they're rare. They're all over the place. Magic happens.
And this other world that they talk about, this second world, the invisible world, all right, is as real to them as the world that you and I experience, right? There's no real distinction. For them, like, all kinds of business happens in this fucking invisible world. And it's always the scary shit, too. Because imagine that you let all of the weird psychotic fears that your primitive brain can come up with and give it sort of unfettered fucking access, you know? It's like, you can believe whatever the fuck you want. Fear whatever the fuck you want to fear. We're going to support those ideas. And we're surprised when... essentially, here's the really frightening thing, actually, about child witches in the Congo, is that it's an industry now. And what I mean by that is revivalist churches, which are kind of bastardized versions of the Catholic Church. So they take the existing faith... And then, you know, they start their own, you know, people will start their own churches because you can make a lot of money doing exorcisms, all right? Because this is a cottage industry. And the state, the government, actually not only allows these revivalist churches to do this and to collect money, they do this specifically because they get to tax these churches on the monies they collect for performing exorcisms. And these exorcisms, let me tell you, are equivalent to torture of children. Okay, burning them, beating them. There's even one instance where an orphanage, I mean, this is so fucking heartbreaking, I cannot tell you. In an orphanage, there was a bunch of people who showed up with a child they had kidnapped from the market, who was there on behalf of the orphanage. They bring him in, and they in front of the entire orphanage, they slit his throat ear to ear and then proceed to beating the shit out of the volunteers before leaving and injuring a number of the children there. This is just one of the many incidences of violence constantly fucking happening in these places, because people really honestly believe that these kids are witches, and there is a war raging against their own children. I mean, I don't even understand how you can actually think that that's a good idea, as a country. I mean, only with the fucking divisive and poisonous power of religion can that even be possible. Who would want to wage war against their own future? It's pretty mind-boggling when you think about it. Now, I want to read the kinds of... There's a checklist, by the way, that these pastors have for the types of symptoms that a child will display if he or she is possessed by a demon and is a witch. And I want to list, there's basically four categories. There's their physical characteristics, there's their their emotional characteristics, there's their behavior, and there's the fourth, this invisible world. Remember the shit that I was talking to you about? Yeah, well, they have a whole list of things that are happening in this imaginary make-fucking-believe world. But let's first deal with what are the physical characteristics of a child that is a witch. Okay. Well, first, they have a strange appearance. They are ill health, thin. They may be small for their age, have a pot belly or malnourished look, have scabies, are dirty, have red eyes, deaf, are ugly, or have a young body but an old face, and then lastly, have epilepsy.
Oh.
Does that not basically sound like any kid that's either ugly, starving, abused, possibly epileptic, or suffering from some kind of, you know, lack of proper, you know, salts and who knows what kind of nutritional issues they're having? That's the physical elements that you're looking for in a child witch. It basically sounds like every starving African child I've ever fucking seen on TV. Okay, number two, what is their character like? Okay, well, first, they will be aggressive. They will be untidy, disobedient, sad, mentally retarded. They'll be impolite, full of hate, mysterious and disrespectful, quick-tempered, unruly. They will lie. They will be hypocrites. They may also be too nice. They may be too wise, whatever the fuck that means, provocative, too open, meaning they'll share their feelings with you when they probably shouldn't, courageous, jealous, too fearful, so chicken shit, stubborn, incomprehensible, solitary, too clever for their own good, weak, fearless, rude, mad, curious, incredulous, selfish. The list goes on. These are basically every single contradictory thing. They'll either be creative or lazy, or be full of initiative, ungrateful, or with feelings of superiority.
Outgoing or shy.
So every single fucking human being will have these, one of these characteristics. There's not one human being that doesn't. Now let's look at their behavior. Tell me if this doesn't sound like every fucking teen you know. They may steal. They may not look people in the eye. In other words, be shy. They may transform themselves or their toys. This one's not too clear about what the fuck they're doing. They can't sleep properly, or they don't want to go to bed at night. They eat a lot. Jesus, that sounds like me. Practice sexual abandon. They have trouble hearing what you're telling them. They may have epileptic fits. They may wet their bed. Remember, that's a witch. They may defecate their own clothes, talk to themselves, sleepwalk, collect things, wander, refuse to study, or are often sick. This is their behavior. Like I said before, I actually I'm starting to wonder what characteristic is not a fucking witch by now. Like, I'm trying to think of all the ways that you can describe a human being.
Yeah, and you really got to worry about whether or not it, like, imagine if you're out there and you're a sleepwalker. I mean, that's a dangerous thing to be.
Oh,
out
my
there.
God, you don't even know. I mean, one of the reasons they mention sleepwalking is because they believe that some witches travel by night. And if you find yourself on a rooftop or anywhere where you're not supposed to be while sleepwalking, you're obviously a witch. So every fucking sleepwalker out there is in danger of being stoned to death.
Yeah, that's nice. If they had cameras, you want one with red eye filter. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
I took a photo and he had red eyes. He's
evil. Kill
him. Kill him. Now, okay, so all of those characteristics we agree are pretty much contradictory, apply to almost everybody. They're the kind of thing that you would expect in a fucking horoscope, right? All right, but now they have that fourth world. This is the invisible world where they say shit happens. So in their imaginations, this is what they're doing. They're eating human flesh. They're casting spells over family members and having spiritual sex with people or causing them sterility. So if you can't have babies, you know, it's because of a curse. They're dangerous murderers and assassins in the night. So if you disappear, it must be them. They go out and bewitch people.
Because nobody else is killing anybody.
No, no, only witches. Only fucking witches. They have the power to go out even if you lock them in their house. So you can obviously say, well, I locked you in your house, but you must have escaped and then come back. Because that's what a witch can do. So, you know, what are you supposed to say against that? They bring natural disasters and unemployment. They paralyze people's social life, so that's the reason why you're not getting laid. They cause traffic and all kinds of epidemics.
Don't forget they steal penises, too.
They do steal penises, although I don't know if that's specifically in the Congo. Although, you know, there was one report that I was reading that they were considering putting a goat in jail because they had said that one of the criminals, a bank robber, had transformed himself into a goat to avoid prosecution. And this is taken seriously by people. Okay, this is what they believe. Now, of course, we can kind of make fun of them because that is, well, at least that part, that one specific story is fucking hilarious amidst the number, you know, like the countless tragedies that I've had to read. But yes, one story of hilarity but you know, we joke at that. But look at our beliefs or the beliefs of people in the West. Oh, yes, a virgin gave birth to a baby boy. I see. Well, that's silly. That's just the tip of the iceberg, man. The list goes on. We only laugh at them because it seems fucking ludicrous to us. But hey, people turning into goats, that makes sense to them. Let's prosecute a goat. Let's hang this goat. He robbed a bank, this goat.
The fortunate thing about religion in the Western world, for the most part, is that when push comes to shove, a lot of people who say that they're religious don't actually believe in the tangible elements of their religion. Like, you know, you can even a lot of these crazy evangelicals, if you push them hard enough, or you put them in a situation where they see something, they're not gonna say that was, you know, magical Jesus action in effort right there, you know.
But you know what? Here's the problem I feel, though, that even though we might say, well, you know, they'll try to they'll have to admit to reality every once in a while, I don't think they do whenever it is really convenient for the rest of the fucking planet. And the big problem that you have in Congo or Uganda or all these African countries is that, you know, like in the 1980s and the 90s, these evangelical pieces of shit went over there and spread their nonsense. And now there's a kind of a toxic mix of their irrationality combined with ancient superstitions. And now what do we have but children being beaten to death, being abandoned, being, tortured? And an entire cottage industry is created as a result of it. I mean, I wish I could tell you that there weren't thousands and thousands of children being tortured for some people to drive nice cars. But that's the truth. And the craziest thing is that the money is coming from the people who can afford it the least. And the remaining remnants of their love for their family members is exploited by religion. That's why, you know, like when you go over there, like let's say during their report, this is the Save the Children International. During the report, they were interviewing these pastors, asking them, how much are you charging? And naturally, like most religious people, they fucking flat out lied when asked an honest fucking question. They said, oh, they're only being charged $5 to pay for people's coffee and what have you. In reality, people had to pay, you know, like $50, $60. And for people living in the Congo, that's a huge amount of money. That is the equivalent of many thousands of fucking dollars. All for this perception that you need to go to a priest in order to remove this curse on both your child and your entire fucking family. What other choices do they have? Many family members will not take back these children if they don't go through these rituals specifically. So, like I said before, it's a fucking cottage industry. What do you have to do but set up an exorcism place, take in clients who have the most vague symptoms in the world that you can interpret any fucking way you want. I mean, most of these symptoms include something I like to call rebelliousness or youth. If you suffer from youth, you may be a witch. And, you know, like, here's the thing that I found was the real tragedy. In the report, the organization says, what can we do to improve the situation? Because they admit that essentially what's happening is a pogrom against children, specifically unwanted children in situations where parents or other family members die and can no longer fucking support them. So what do you do but, you know, figure out a nice way to exclude them, dehumanize them, and then kill them? This is a human thing. This is what we do, people. This is a fucking scary situation. But you know what? Here's the sad truth. In those countries, these churches, these revivalist churches, are the only form of social organization they have there. The government's fucking completely abandoned them. If it doesn't collect taxes from them, it doesn't do shit. It may even sort of like encourage most of these pogroms as a way of the population ignoring all the other fucking problems happening around them. And that's a huge issue. These are still, in a sense, the good guys because there's just a huge proliferation of everyone else is even worse. And yet they go to these these fucking douchebags that that cloak everything they do in this perception of what they do is right, because we continue to support this idea as a society that religion is a good thing, that it doesn't fucking poison everything, even though it does. I mean, the report was clear. These revivalists and religions are taking advantage of these people and making the situation worse. And yet their solution was that we should work with these organizations. Like, what the fuck are you supposed to do? They're proliferating it. They're profiteering from it. Why would they stop? That's a huge fucking problem. Well, they're going to stop because you're telling them that they're hurting fucking children? It doesn't seem to bother them now. I don't think it's going to bother them if you give them a little bit more fucking education. I have a better solution. We need to replace these religious institutions with fucking secular ones that don't torture kids. That's my solution. That's not an easy one now, is it? Now, it's better to work with these religious organizations and hope they're going to fucking eventually submit to our version of the Enlightenment over there, you know, where religious organizations are forced to not kill gay people. You know, you remember that whole Uganda kill the gays bill? Yeah, drafted by evangelical Americans who get to work outside of the rules in other places. And you're going to make me fucking believe the religion's still a force for good. Yeah, I don't think so. There's not a lot of arguments left. It really isn't. And Africa is a perfect fucking example of the evils of religion, unfettered by fucking modern ethics. It's like, what happens when you take religion without modern ethics and you put it out in the world? Children fucking being tortured as a cottage industry. Ta-da!
Lovely.
Isn't it, though? Okay, well, you know what? I think that covers it. You guys should check out the notes. Please read the report. It's like 34 pages. I know that's long. And like I said before, most people don't read stuff. But I feel like if you do read it, you'll be much more informed. And every time somebody tells you that their religion is a force for good, shove this back in their fucking faces. This is a reality that is happening. These are the dangers of superstition and the inability to fight them. I mean, what is the UK government supposed to do other than to fucking outlaw this religious nonsense, which they can't do? So I don't know. You can try your whole education thing. I don't think people really want to be educated about reality. They prefer to live in this sort of invisible world where their worst fears become reality. It's messed up. It's fucking messed. Okay, let's end on a good note, positive note, shall we? Because I feel like I'm like the bearer of bad news all the time. Like, hey, kids are being tortured. Welcome to the news. I actually want to read a letter that I received from a fan who sent this to his congregation. So he's obviously a Baptist, and he says, "To whom it may concern, I'm a former member of your organization. In recent years, I have studied scripture, Christian principles, religious dogma, and as a result have reached the conclusion that there is no evidence for a divine being." Nice. "Though I have some fond memories of my time as a Christian, I do have one serious regret at that time. I tithed regularly to your organization and now feel that money could have gone to more worthy causes. I paid my money mainly to two churches to which I held membership, Wheeler Grove Baptist and Oakland Baptist, both in Alcorn County, Missouri. Both of these churches have lavish buildings with stained glass windows, huge grounds, padded pews, air conditioning, and various other amenities that seem to me to be in direct opposition to the teachings of your Christ. Every time I drive past one of these buildings, I think of the good that could have been done in lieu of the, forgive me, hypocritical opulence. I tithe regularly for 10 years with an average salary of $30,000, which means my donations total $30,000. I have no desire to recoup this money, but I have a great desire to see it donated to a more worthy and beneficial cause. The purpose of this communication is to ask that the money I previously donated be redirected to a charity of my choice. And the choice is foundationbeyondbelief.org. According to my research, this is the charity with the most beneficial in accordance to my feelings towards my fellow man. If the secular nature of this organization is too disagreeable, then I ask an alternative for you to consider, Doctors Without Borders. I know you agree that this organization has nothing but the best interest of humanity in mind. I know you have no obligation for my request. I tithe the money in good faith. Ha ha. However, since I feel I was defrauded in my belief in God that, in my opinion, doesn't exist, I feel strongly that my restitution is not unreasonable. As an addendum, I base my appeal on your scripture, Matthew 5:39-42. Thank you for your consideration in advance." And that's signed one of our fans, Dan. And if you're wondering what Matthew 5:39-42 is, it says, "But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you or take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you.
So he's basically saying, even though you may consider me an enemy at this point, you should still do what I say, because hey, that's what Matthew says.
Right. Well, you know, I always love these letters where they just basically throw scripture back into people's faces. It's beautiful. I mean, I'm sure they'll throw back one into, you know, one in your face again, and not as though these people don't have some kind of scriptural justification for what they do. But I still nevertheless like the fact that he's asking this church that he tied over $30,000 to donate it to another fucking cause. I think it's ballsy, and anyone who's left a church should send a fucking message like that. I mean, yeah, they won't respond to it, but at least you were clear in saying, hey, your buildings are opulent and ridiculous. You don't know the first thing about charity. Fuck you.
Yeah, it'd be nice just to find out, you know, in any given community, what the churches are doing for the community and for humanitarian issues around the world. And you know, who knows? I'm sure in many cases you'll be pleasantly surprised, but I imagine in many more cases you will just be you'll be disturbed at how self-serving a lot of it ends up being.
I think the problem is inherently that religion appeals to a person's ego in often some of the worst ways. And I'll give you an example, right? Like, take a person who believes in, say, nothing but the most charitable things about what Jesus said. And for them, when they read the Bible, they focus on those elements because it already confirms something that they previously believed. Let's say that solidarity of man or fucking whatever. The problem is that this is not a good basis to analyze whether or not the decisions you make are moral or not. I mean, in a case where someone is trying to do good, it might seem easy, but what way are they doing good? I mean, are they doing good at the end of a fucking bayonet? Are they promising food only when someone acquiesces to their fucking religious demands? Is that a form of good? Or what about all the evil that whatever it is, you know, the organization they profess belief in causes themselves? I would have a real problem, for instance, associating myself with any group that did any kind of evil, even if they did a lot of good. You know, that's the kind of person that I am. And I'm sure lots of religious people claim to be, but unfortunately, because of the pressures of their belief, they're not. Right? They're supporting organizations like the Catholic Church that makes the world a worse place. I mean, we talked about the, you know, in Congo, all those kids who get abandoned and their family members died. Well, they died of AIDS because they didn't use condoms. Who's to fucking blame for that? Well, partially the fucking church who says don't wear them. Yeah, you think maybe they're responsible? I mean, even if you just turned around and said, I did all this good through my religion, it doesn't wash that shit away. And I think that's one of the things that we never really deal with, and that annoys me. We're somehow okay. We point to the good and say, well, you know, they do good. It doesn't fucking matter. I don't care if your neighbor helped you every day carry out your garbage. If he raped your kids, he's a fucking criminal. You know what I mean? That's it.
There seems to be a bit of a zero-sum game being played nowadays where, you know, we have to accept all of these flaws that are inherent in whatever systems are already set up. And it bugs the hell out of me, and I kind of wish we would look towards a new system of doing things. Because if you've been watching, you know, everything go down the shitter over the past 5 to 7 years...
I have no choice. It's forced upon me.
You'll notice that there's a lot of problems that are very obvious, but no solutions, and there's just no action being done. And it would be very nice if we maybe took an approach that was resembling less government and more, say, software versions, where, you know, 1.1 comes out. Here's what we're doing, and there are some flaws with 1.1 and the way how we're doing things. We got to fix those. And now we have 1.1.1.
Yeah, well, even in a government like the US, they were called amendments, dude.
Yeah, well, none of that. I mean, it's not happening anymore. If you take a look, have you heard how little the House and the Senate has done over the past 4 years?
Well, I know like that they've passed a lot of laws about abortion.
They passed 5 meaningful pieces of legislation. That's all they've done. And even then, a lot of those are not that good.
Well, you have to remember that what happens with a lot of these laws, they're like, okay, well, we're going to pass this really helpful law, plus a increase our salaries bill. You know what I mean? Like, they can tack on all kinds of things. Have you heard about some of the things they tack on to bills that are otherwise for, say, emergency relief? They'll tack on all other kinds of scary shit there. It's unbelievable. You're just like, excuse me, why are you adding a right to life amendment to a fucking disaster relief bill? Oh, I see. Because you can do that, and that's okay. Well, the system is corrupt and disgusting. Congratulations. This is what you live with.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunate that religious organizations can't take a look at what they're doing and slowly move away from the bad aspects, at least acknowledge them and work towards eliminating them.
I think it's a waste. I think that there really is. I know that most people think that there's probably, you know, you're saying, well, you have to work with these people. And I'm like, I don't think we've been trying that, and the situation's not gotten better. Like, what are you supposed to do in Congo with working with these religious leaders that have an obvious financial motive to continue what they're doing? I'm not entirely sure. What are you supposed to say? I mean, like, maybe if you have a Picard-level fucking speech, maybe then. But I don't think that's going to fucking work. I mean, we can't even convince... You can't convince people in the United States that are on Medicare that they should, you know, fix that big giant problem that they have with it. They're like, people work against their own interests, even. It's frightening. But this is what happens when individuals are deeply ignorant. Now, I do believe that part of the solution is education. Absolutely. They were even talking about working with parents that had basically abandoned their children to witchcraft, and that they were able to take them back and demonstrating the fact that there's still love there. It's just that this love is masked in this horrible ideology that they believe in that has justified some of their evil actions quite easily. And you know what? You should not have any belief system that justifies your evil actions, because you and I will perform some evil actions every now and again. We're probably doing a bit right now, even by our own existence, doing a little bit of evil. It may be inevitable, but there should be no way to easily justify that. You know, when you can just wash your hands of it and say, well, I was forgiven by Christ, so it doesn't matter what I do. Well, that's fucking easy. Nice get out of jail free card there, but life is not Monopoly. Well, unless you're a rich person, I guess. You know what? I think we should wrap up the show with that. Mostly because I want to wrap it up fast enough so I can put it up, because it's got to go now. Let everybody know this is the final hours for the Kickstarter campaign, and we're at about two.
Not Kickstarter anymore.
Oh,
not
I'm sorry.
Kickstarter. Yeah, not Kickstarter. Right.
Thank you. Indiegogo campaign, and I think we're 2,000 short of beating what we had on the Kickstarter. And this was quite a challenge, too, by the way, because a lot of people from Kickstarter are like, I don't want to go on Indiegogo. I don't like that site. And, you know, I can't necessarily blame them having used the service. This is a fun my fucking life site. But I think that you guys will appreciate the fact that this is not what this project is. We're doing this book, and I hope you guys are proud of the fact that I didn't let that whole Kickstarter thing drag us down. I fought that shit and we won again. So it's happening. Whatever the fuck else happens, this book is happening. So please support as much as you can, because the more support you give now, the better this book's going to be. And that's put simply and plainly. And with that, my name is Jacob Forchan.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.